I wouldn't use the word further electronic medical records because all of us would like to do that. Electronic medical records help prevent errors. It's always great if your medical records can arrive at the hospital ahead of you, especially in an emergency. That's not the issue. This bill requires that every individual, every person, that's on page 445, 454, 479, it makes it very clear that this is mandatory and it will apply to every single person in the United States, no exceptions.
And so what will that mean in practical application, that you can be tracked or that there are some privacy issues?
Well, first of all, it requires that your medical treatments be entered into this federal electronic database. But it's not just for your convenience. If you look on page 442 of the House version, it lists 11 purposes for these records, including reducing health care costs, eliminating what the federal panels will deem inappropriate care, guiding medical decisions at the time and place of care. Much of this information is vague, but very expansive. Another concern is that the same stimulus bill includes a provision for something called the Federal Council on Comparative Effectiveness Research. Now, that also sounds good. Everybody wants to get the most for their money. But the way this is done, this is a term of art that's very familiar to people in the healthcare field. They take the cost of a treatment and divide it by the number of years the patient is likely to benefit from the treatment. So treatments for young people always pass muster. But treatments for elderly people, like treatments for Alzheimer's, osteoporosis, macular degeneration, often don't, because an elderly person may only have 10 or 15 years to enjoy the benefits of better health.
So it sounds like you're saying the tools are in place, at least, or the pieces would be there for the eventual rationing of health care.
That's right. And wherever you stand on government's role in health care, we should all be able to agree that transparency is important. And why were these provisions slipped into a stimulus bill? They have nothing to do with jump-starting the economy. The electronic medical records deadline is 5 years off, and the spending for comparative effectiveness research amounts to 0.001% of the stimulus spending. So this has nothing to do with jump-starting. I did find an answer to why it's in here.
Tell us why.
Well, I looked on Tom Daschle's book. In fact, that's what got me to read the stimulus bill to begin with, something more of our Washington representative should have done. I looked on page 196 of Daschle's book, and I came across the explanation. Daschle, as you may remember, who was slated to head HHS, was very strongly supportive of the Clinton bill. And in the book, he explains that he believes the Clinton bill was defeated because the president allowed too much debate and allowed opposition to build over time. So he advised the new president to slip the provisions right away into the first piece of legislation to come out of his administration. And he says on page 196, quote, "If that means attaching a health care plan to the federal budget, so be it. The issue is too important to be stalled by Senate protocol." Well, to me, this is a lack of democracy.
And a lack of debate on whether or not this is the way the country should move forward, which clearly we are going to have this year. So does this really set a precursor or a precedent for how the healthcare debate will go?
Well, man is not made to predict. Several wise philosophers have said that. But to me, the provisions in this bill that apply to health care and are not part of the stimulus program should be repealed and offered as separate legislation so that seniors, patient advocates, of which I am one, and physician groups, and everyone who's concerned about the future of health care can weigh in. Experts can be called. There can be markups, testimony, everything that's needed to make a good bill.
Well, just to play devil's advocate for a moment, some of the people that are aware of this provision say, well, we've always measured the benefit of health care and the cost versus the expected benefit, and so this is really nothing new, just a little extension on it.
Not true. Medicare now pays for treatments that are deemed safe and efficacious. The stimulus bill would change that by authorizing the Secretary of Health and Human Services to consider this additional data and deciding which treatments will be reimbursed.
We're talking this morning.
This is a big change for seniors, a big change.
We're talking this morning to Dr. Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York and senior adjunct fellow at the Hudson Institute. So when you say this is a big change for seniors, this is really aimed at Medicare reform as well. Is that right?
It appears to be. And let me give you a preview. In 2006, the UK version of the Council on Comparative Effectiveness. In fact, Daschle says in his book we should establish such a council and model it on the UK version. The UK Health Board decreed that elderly patients with a disease called macular degeneration, it's a kind of blind,
sure,
had to wait until they went blind in one eye before they could get a costly new drug to save the other eye.
Wow. And so essentially they're setting up parameters of treatment. In other words, you have to be thusly disabled in order to go forward and get a treatment depending on the cost.
That's right. And the particular method used for comparative effectiveness research, it's called the QALY method, Q-U-A-L-Y, puts seniors at a big disadvantage. And I don't think Americans are ready for this. I'm certainly not ready to tell seniors that they're too old to benefit from certain treatments, because our seniors are living longer and having much larger health spans, not just lifespans, but many, many more years of vital life ahead. And so for them, getting a knee repair or a hip replacement or medication to save their vision, this is important.
Yeah, so it sounds like you could, as an elderly person, walk into a healthcare provider and they'll say, well, this treatment could help you, but since you're likely to die from some other cause before this one, therefore we're not going to pay for the treatment of it. Is that what you're envisioning?
I'm asking for something very reasonable. I'm asking for these provisions to be lifted out of this bill, repealed, and offered as separate legislation. All we're asking for is transparency. People on all sides of the political spectrum should be able to agree on that. Transparency, that's what we were promised.
And Dr. McCoy, if this was implemented, it would probably take a large bureaucracy in order to oversee it, wouldn't it, at HHS?
Chances are it would, but the really important impact is on the individual.
So, in other words, how we are treated today would change dramatically if some of these provisions continue.
Yes, and also it's important to know that this bill suggests a drive toward enforcement of uniformity in the practice of medicine. Now, that sounds good because there are some doctors that don't keep up with medical research and should be informed about the latest methods and best procedures. But if you have an incurable illness, or if you're the atypical patient, you don't want your doctor's hands to be tied. In his book, Daschle praises the Europeans for being more willing to accept, quote, hopeless diagnoses and to forego experimental treatments. Well, in America, we fight for life, and the use of those experimental treatments and off-label drugs are what save lives today, but also produce the new medical knowledge, the proven effective therapy for tomorrow.